News, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
Morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5. It is 8:07. The Panini Senior Bowl rolls around quickly. You know, college football season beginning right now. It's not a bad idea to have the Panini Senior Bowl in mind, especially here in Mobile.
No, and I just went to the website, seniorbowl.com, just to double-check what date the Senior Bowl will be played. And it looks like it's so far away, January 31st, 2026. Mm-hmm. But we know it'll be here before we know it. And on to discuss the Senior Bowl watch list and also the year to come is Executive Director of the Panini Senior Bowl, Drew Fabianich. Hey, Drew, welcome back to Mobile Mornings.
Hey, Dan. Hey, Dalton. Hey, we're not calling it the watch list anymore.
See, I've already messed
Senior
up.
Senior Bowl top 300.
Okay.
The reason why I took away the watch list is we watch everybody. Mm-hmm. So it's like, you know, it's not specifics that we're watching because, you know, this list doesn't necessarily mean that we're going to take our 145 on the roster out of this 300. Players can still play their way into an invite into the Senior Bowl. And, you know, this was based on everybody that we have watched, and we took the top 300 grades and put them together regardless of position. And, you know, I've already gotten, oh, well, then, you know, such and such belongs on the list. No, if they're not in the top 300, they're not going on the list right now. This is a premier all-star game in the country. Always has been, always will be. We wanted to make this more exclusive. And the people I've talked to said they're treating more like they're telling the kids, the players, that it's an honor just to be on the 300.
Sure.
And then it's a huge honor to be invited to the game. And I want it to come off that way because I think when you dilute it down to almost every eligible senior that, you know, could be, you know, possibly in the game, I think you give some of those kids a little bit of a little bit of false hope. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, because I've been in college. I've been in, you know, personnel in the NFL. And put it this way, there's not 16 players on every team that has a chance of playing in the Senior Bowl. There's not.
Right.
I mean, let's just get real. It's the best against the best.
Yeah.
So, you know, and again, I wasn't being, you know, facetious about that, about the watch list. I just want the watch list, you know, to kind of just go away.
Because,
you know, we watch every weekend. We're going to elevate people. And we're going to invite people outside of the 300. I'd be willing to bet.
Yeah. And so by
this is just a starting point. You know what I mean?
Sure. Mm-hmm. And by the time the season's over, you could be seeing somebody not on this list originally. You watch them develop. Maybe they suddenly got playing time that they weren't getting earlier. Could be somebody from a major school that's been kind of riding the pine a little bit because of people in front of them. And suddenly you're starting to say to yourself, hey, that guy's pretty good. And a name that we weren't familiar with when the season started could be somebody that gets the invite, right?
Absolutely. And you know, the other part of it is, what if it's a junior that elevates himself up into the first two rounds? I mean, I didn't have here's the hard part about this. You know, how many juniors do you actually put on? Well, I like to try to keep it to where the juniors, if they're in the top three rounds, those are the kind of guys we included. The ones that were below that, sometimes that makes the head coach not real happy with you because he may want to keep that fifth rounder around for a little while longer and develop him and make him into a third rounder. So there's a fine line I had to walk. A head coach yesterday said, you know, hey, you know, you didn't send one to such and such. And I go, well, I thought it would kind of piss you off. And he goes, no. And I said, but you didn't put the running back on either. And I said, no. And he says, I'm glad you didn't do that. I'm going like, okay, well, you know what I'm saying? It's a double-edged sword.
Yeah.
So, you know, and again, at least I'm communicating with some of them that want to know the whys. And some of them are, you know, sitting there going, okay, well, I get that now. I'll say, well, good. And because I don't want to piss head coaches off.
Yeah.
I really don't.
Well, I like it being a more exclusive list. You're right. It should mean more when you're on the Senior Bowl list, when you're invited to the Senior Bowl. It's such an exclusive club just to make it to training camp in the NFL, much less the final 53. And the Senior Bowl should kind of have that weight behind it as well. And you know, Drew, we're talking with Executive Director Drew Fabianich with the Panini Senior Bowl. Going into the college season, everybody wants to have bragging rights, right? Whether it's their conference or their team. And I noticed, kind of like year in and year out, it seems like the SEC, at least in this initial top 300, has the most players that...
Yeah, like a third of them.
Yeah, 109 out of the 300 coming from the SEC. The next closest conference is the Big Ten with 68. So you're seeing a lot of talent, as usual, in those 16 teams with the conference.
Well, and I think that's kind of held true, you know, over the last probably like 15 years.
Hmm.
You know, I think the population's changed. I think more people have, you know, moved down south. You know, the old hotbeds of the Big Ten, you know, some of those cities, you know, are a little bit decrepit, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
And the population's moved. There's always been a shift, you know, especially in the NFL, because, you know, the Southeast Scout, you know, always got paid more than everybody else because had more players to do every single year. But the meat of it does come from the Big Ten and the SEC. And, you know, the ACC's third and the Big 12's fourth. You know, but the thing that you notice is that, you know, there's four teams in the SEC that have 10 or more.
Yeah.
I mean, so, again, if you've got 10 or more players, you should be competing for a playoff spot. You should. Bottom line.
Yeah, and LSU leading the way with 14. So maybe a little, not that he needed more, but extra pressure on Brian Kelly. Going into this season with that kind of talent on the roster. Yeah. And Kalen DeBoer and Bama right behind him with 13, and you also have Ole Miss and Oklahoma with more than 10. Mm-hmm. Penn State, the only Big Ten team that has 10. And I found it interesting, Auburn, you know, as much talk as there's been about Hugh Freeze this offseason and how the last couple seasons have looked, there's a lot of talent on that roster, too. I think you have 8 players from them in the top 300.
Yeah, he's done a good job recruiting. And, you know, there's, again, they've got to produce also. I mean, they have to. But they've done a good job, and some of those kids I actually recruited. So it was good to see them, like at the SEC Media Day, because I got face to face with them again. So at least I'm closely tied with them, and I'm closely tied with, you know, a few of the quarterbacks too.
Mm-hmm.
Not so much because of, you know, the recruiting piece of it, it's because, you know, I work with the dads, you know, and that kind of helps a little bit.
How about
especially
that?
When we're talking about getting them into the game, you know.
Remind everybody your last stop or your last couple of stops before you ended up at the Senior Bowl and what role you were playing at those stops.
Well, I mean, I coached for 17 years, sort of different places, but I coordinated both sides of the ball. Then I went to the Cowboys. I was there for 18 years, 14 out of those 18 years. I was a national scout there. Then I went to Auburn as a GM. And then I went to West Virginia as a general manager.
Oh, that's right.
So some great experience at pretty much all the levels of football with our new executive director, Drew Fabianich. What positions are kind of standing out to you going into this season? What positions do you think will be most sought after in that first 15 picks of the NFL draft?
You know, that's on – sometimes, you know, they say best player available, but sometimes it's by need.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, sometimes quarterbacks get overdrafted because – teams are desperate, so you got to look at the roster and, you know, kind of do that. I can tell you where the numbers are a little bit stronger. I think this is a good quarterback class. I think it's a numbers wise, I think it's a good receiver class, but I think more of those receivers are twos and not ones.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yep.
Offensive line is kind of standard. It's about the same number as it was last year. The D line is not as strong as it was last year, but the edge rushers, I think, are stronger this year. And a trend that's kind of been the last 7 or 8 years, the linebacker numbers are down.
Hmm.
And I think that's just the way this game has changed into a spread offense, and, you know, it's spread out defense, and it's taken the linebackers off the field and made safeties, you know, like real linebackers.
Yeah, more prevalent.
Let me
ask you about this. Are less team? One big change. Belton, I've commented on this a time or two for sure because it's affecting South Alabama. But the players from teams like South Alabama,
I know where you're going with this.
They're not there anymore. I mean, Lopez is at North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
The running back that had a great freshman year, they just get plucked up and off they go to Mississippi State. I mean, that's happening more and more, isn't it?
Well, yeah, and there's only 24 kids that are in G5 or below on the list. And put it this way, when I was a general manager, I was looking at all the other conferences. I was looking at Division II. I was looking at measurable guys, the ones that were productive, the ones that were All-Americans. And, you know, and if I had a need, I was going to pluck them too.
Yeah.
And, you know, and God bless the G5 schools, they can't afford to keep them. And it's too bad because they've become the minor leagues for, you know, the P4s.
Yeah, they really have. They really have.
And it's not right because let's put it this way, 24 total. I mean, I bet you that's probably, if, you know, 5-6 years ago before NIL, I bet you that would have been about 55, you know,
yeah,
right in there. But they're all gone. Like you said, you look at most of them and they transferred from somewhere. They transferred from somewhere, you know. And, you know, and again, there's a kid at Kent State. There's a kid that went to Kentucky. There's a kid from South Dakota that went to Kentucky that I was recruiting, you know, West Virginia. And they were all Americans. Well, and they had huge numbers. Well, I couldn't beat Kentucky on them, and they couldn't stay where they were because they were making nothing.
Yeah, right, so, right.
And I'm not against kids making money. Don't get me wrong. I'm all for it. But it's a mess, and it needs to be regulated, and it needs to be at least put some structure to it.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, it really has, put it this way, it's made this job easier because they're identifying the lower division guys that used to be the quote sleepers of the draft.
Yeah, they're doing your job for you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it certainly hurts with roster buildup for those group of five and lower teams. But, you know, with the playoff, the way it's situated, there is a chance a group of five team could catch lightning in a bottle and in some fashion become maybe the national champ or at least close to it. So people kind of have that dream alive. But I know one of the things, Drew, that we love about having the Senior Bowl here in Mobile are how often we get to see local guys, whether they grew up in Mobile or Baldwin County and went on to play somewhere else or whether they came to South Alabama to play. So I know when the list comes out like it did yesterday, the top 300, people look for those kind of guys. I haven't done a full investigation for all the local names that have gone elsewhere, but you do have the running back from South Alabama, Kentrell Bullock, is in the top 300, and of the guys from Bama, you have Deontay Lawson, the Mobile Christian star,
right here,
also on the list. So there's a chance, and they'll have to earn it, as you've pointed out, but there's a chance we see more local guys here in Mobile in January again.
Yeah, and again, put it this way, it's also important to have Birmingham kids here too, right, or Hoover kids. I mean, I think it's important to have Alabama kids here. I mean, if they're worthy, and again, it's not going to be a charity pick, but it's going to be, you know, are they worthy enough to play in this game?
True, I don't know.
It is important.
I don't know if you're aware. I do color commentary on high school football on UTV 44. Our game tomorrow is Saraland, well-known commodity, but really great program, at Jackson. I don't know if you're aware of this. Jackson, a 4A school, whereas Saraland 6A, 4A school, and at this moment, both cornerbacks are committed to North Carolina, their quarterback to South Carolina, and their running back to the University of Alabama. And they've got other players on that team too that have got scholarship offers. Is that something or what? Sure.
Yeah, it is. I mean, this has always been a hotbed. I mean, Mobile area has always been, you know, very highly recruited by a lot of different places. I mean, you know that. I mean,
sure.
There's always been a lot of players down this way.
Teams like Purdue would come down here and just kind of like throw a net. they would just like, okay, if you're not offered by Bama, maybe it's a wide receiver at Murphy. Like, you're good enough for us.
Yeah.
And so they would just come down and pick what was left.
Yeah, and so often we'd see those guys move on, be a big name in college, come to the Senior Bowl, and then many that have became big names in the NFL. It's an exciting time of year, Drew. We are stoked. I know you and your team have so much work cut out for you because while you've been scouting, you never really stop scouting. Now you get to get out to the games and watch the film. I know it's got to be exciting for you guys.
Yeah, it is. And then, like I said, we'll have a presence out there at a lot of games. I'll be going to one of the high school games. I'm going to go see a little local flavor on Friday.
Nice. Excellent. All right.
Yeah.
Drew, thanks a bunch for your time. And we will obviously keep an eye on those 300 that you mentioned. And we're just going to watch college football overall and see what we see. So it should be fun.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
You got it.
Executive Director of the Panini Senior Bowl, Drew Fabianich. And, man, it sounds like he's got it together. Looking forward to another great year of football here. And then the Senior Bowl, January 31st, 2026. Check it out, SeniorBowl.com. More Mobile Mornings on the way.
Good morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5, 826. It was J.D. Vance among the people that were dropping in on the National Guard guys and telling them a little pat on the back what a job they're doing in D.C. right now.
Yeah.
Numbers are impressive.
Yeah, they had some stats, pretty much all instances of crime dropping pretty rapidly, including carjackings, which seems that D.C. has become kind of the carjacking capital of America over the last 5, 6, 7 years. I mean, so many people talking about just pulling up at a gas pump and then immediately being carjacked and over and over and in all locations around the city. It was entertaining watching Vance and Stephen Miller out there yesterday. You had Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth, who didn't speak as much as the other two, but certainly you could see from his facial reactions, he thought the whole thing was hilarious. They were there to visit National Guard troops and also gave them burgers. I guess they were feeding them some Shake Shack burgers. And the story really became about the protesters as they were getting yelled at Union Station. And I thought Miller and Vance played it pretty perfectly. Something we've been saying about so many of these protests, now not all of them, but many of the protests against Trump and Trump policies or whatever people feel that Trump policies may be. Because really, Dan, when it comes down to it, it's about your feelings more than the actual facts. But so often you look out at these protests and they are older, white, hippie liberals, I guess, if you want to call it that.
Yeah.
And they noted that yesterday. First time I've seen it actually pronounced by a vice president, to say the least. So Miller, he said he dismissed the demonstrators as elderly white hippies and said Trump was restoring safety for black residents. They kept pointing that out. They go, the majority.
What are you doing?
The majority of the population here in D.C. are black folks. And
would like to be safe.
And they would like to be able to walk around in their community and do things. And Vance, he called it bizarre. He said, I think his line was like, so many of these old white people out here haven't felt danger in their entire lives. And well, they don't know what it's about.
Well, they're all, a lot of them are professional, too. You know, I mean, they're protesters.
Yeah.
It's kind of what they do. They show up like a band on tour. Okay, we're going to go here now. Also, did you see the disturbing, it was a story in the Washington Post that divulged some of the security details for Pete Hegseth, and it was trying to paint Hegseth in a certain light, like he's got needs that are a little over the top.
They're saying he had too much security, right?
Yeah,
more or less.
But they were in the article itself kind of divulged more than you would like for the safety of your Secretary of Defense.
Well, even criticizing how much security the Secretary of Defense gets is kind of a ridiculous notion to begin with.
Yeah.
I mean, you know how many pots we have in the fire right now? Just Iran and how many assassinations they've called for of U.S. Important political figures. And, Hegseth, he's going around, he's doing these fitness challenges like you saw with RFK, and he's making all these appearances, but apparently still getting work done. You saw this U.S. forces killed a senior ISIS figure in northern Syria on Tuesday. They said this fella with ISIS was being groomed to become the group's next leader. They also took out a top financial official tied to planned attacks in Syria and Iraq. They said in this killing, no U.S. or coalition troops were injured, no civilian casualties. Pentagon called it a successful operation, removing a direct threat to U.S. forces.
Clean sweep. Sounds like special forces all over that.
It does, doesn't it?
8:30, Dan and Dalton, good morning. Morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5, Mobile Mornings at 8:35. Talk with Rob Holpert from Lanyap Mobile. Dalton, I don't know if local news at some point had a lull or kind of over the summer, maybe a dead period. I don't remember if it did, but if it did, that's over. Because there's so many news stories out there.
There are. We were trying to discuss, what will we talk about with Rob, and there's certainly plenty to choose from. Good morning, Rob.
It's always feast or famine, guys. That's how it is.
It's feast right now.
I always say whenever there's a lull, I'm like, okay, well, get ready.
It's coming.
About to happen. But my guys are walking out the door every day going, wow, that was a full day. I'm like, yeah, that's a full day's work.
Yeah.
A lot going on.
And, of course, many of these stories peaking because we have the elections coming up on Tuesday.
Right.
And one of these that has been a contentious one, let's start with the Orange Beach mayoral. And more out from Kyle Hamrick and Rob Hulbert this week. Recording of Kennan at Getaway Coastal Resources Building leaked. And I, along with, I'm sure, thousands and thousands of others, have listened to that audio at lanyatmobile.com. And I'm sure everyone's come to their own determination. But what you can't dispute is Tony Kennan said he uses that office as a getaway. And that was part of the story from the jump.
Yeah, and, you know, and the thing was, too, is, you know, we were allowed to review the video as well. We're not allowed to post the video because there's some issues that potentially would reveal a source on that. So they were not comfortable with that, but we were allowed to see the video and also to get audio up from the video. And so this is a police body camera footage. And, you know, people can watch it, draw their own conclusions. There definitely was someone in that room. I mean, the officers could see who it was because he pulled the curtain aside. I don't think you can really see it very clearly in the video, but you can see the curtains being pulled aside in the video, the blind. So they made eye contact with him visually. You know, they certainly believed it to be Mayor Tony Kennan.
Mm-hmm.
He's still not discuss it, won't talk about it. He has never said whether it was him or not.
Well, and it was either Kennan or Kennan impersonator, because they had a full conversation.
It was either him or his twin, yes.
Yeah, the Kennan impersonator plays at the Floribama, I think, on Thursday night.
On Thursday night.
Yeah, that's the guy who's getting in fistfights.
Routine.
Well, the thing is, at this point, you know, you can, people can say, oh, you know, he's a good mayor or whatever. That's fine. But I think when you look at the basis, you know, we've done three stories here about three circumstances in which he is either was definitely involved in violence or alleged to be involved in violence. And in all three of those cases, the police department was manipulated to help him get away with that. And those are not, that's not speculation. That's in police reports. That's in police reports that were manipulated, police reports that were done incorrectly, officers driving him home in the middle of the night to leave from the scene of an event of an assault. You know, so these are not, this isn't me speculating. These are things that are in black and white in writing. So, you know, people can say, well, it's, you know, he's a good mayor, but, you know, okay, he likes to have fun or whatever. Whatever excuses people make for it, but you have manipulation of the police department going on along with misuse of an office, misuse of policemen, you know, and then you go back to the whole issue of misusing boats. They filed a settlement from a guy he punched in the mouth on the city insurance. He's had sexual harassment settlements. I mean, you know, it goes on and on.
Mm-hmm.
But that's, so I mean, I think there's a case there for people to look at and say, you know, there are some issues.
Yeah.
And you know, and it's and also on just on top of all of that, when he gets in trouble with these things, he has, you know, that what he says is that doesn't appear to be very truthful.
Well, meanwhile,
and that's where we are.
And yeah. Yeah, so
and I thought, you know, in the video, in the audio that was released there, Rob, a couple things that I thought were notable. I'm glad that it included the witness speaking with the officer, because I think a lot of people have either assumed or theorized that the witness themselves was a plant, all meant to make Kennan look bad, and it certainly didn't seem that way in the audio recording. And then also as far as police, once they made it to the Coastal Resources Building and made it to that office, Kennan was the one who first brought up, hey, you can talk to my wife if you want. One of the officers says, okay, and then it kind of goes nowhere from there, and they end up not making contact with the female that was allegedly in that office.
That's right. And then, you know, it just, if you can tell from the audio, the whole demeanor of it changes. The officers are, beating on the door, you know, usual police tactics. And then, you know, he says, hey, this is Tony Kennan, the mayor. And they're like, and all of a sudden it's, oh, wait a minute, mayor. Hey, sorry about bothering you. They're apologizing. Mm-hmm. And then he asks them to explain what the domestic call was about. And they say, oh, we really don't know. We didn't have much information, which isn't true. They had all that information, but they didn't want to talk about it. You know, it's very clear they backed off and didn't do their jobs. And then the way they filed the police report was it excluded his name, excluded any of that information when it was first, I mean, really throughout it, it didn't have his name in any of it. But when it was first put in the system, it didn't have any names on it. It didn't have really any narrative, which is unusual, but that's what goes out to everybody. And then they filed some supplements that had a little more information, but they didn't really have all the information. And then finally, you know, 4 days later, somebody went and talked to Mrs. Kennan about this incident. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it still was all sort of covered up and hushed up. And I think, you know, that's troubling, and people really should think about that. You know, are they okay with the concept of police falsifying reports and doing things like that to protect a public official? And, you know, I would say that that's not a good thing. But, you know, some people have different opinion on that. Mm-hmm. But it feel like maybe, you know, an elected official should get to do whatever they want. But, you know, I wasn't brought up that way.
Yeah, well, we'll see. The voters will speak at the polls. Yeah. And yeah. The lawsuit did that here in Mobile. We're getting closer and closer to our day. And this mayor's race, quite interesting. It hasn't really gotten nasty, although a little bloodshed with the Spiro dust up with a political operative, I guess, for one of the other candidates last week.
Yeah, I think, you know, there was some texting going on and some stuff that was, you know, a little, you know, this race has not, I wouldn't say, been very nasty or contentious. It's starting to get a little hot here at the end because I don't know if anybody really knows. I don't even think the campaigns are really certain what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. I think everybody's a little bit, I mean, even when I've talked to people who are around the campaigns, they're sort of like, yeah, we think this is what's happening, but we're not sure. And I hear different horse races from all of them, you know, all of them, our guys in front, our gals in front. And then this is who we think's in second, third, whatever. But, and those have sort of varied as well. So it is really kind of a toss up. I mean, I don't know that we've had a circumstance like this where we really didn't feel like, I mean, I think it's been a long time since we've had, mm-hmm. you know, nobody not had an incumbent in, and we had sort of this much open. But I think even at that point, we knew, you know, okay, Sam Jones is definitely going to be in the runoff, and it sure looked like John Peavy was as well. And then, but right now, I think anything could happen.
Yeah, it seems that way. I mean, we poll around the office, obviously, yeah. just asking, hey, who do you think will be in the runoff?
Right.
And that's usually how it begins. Who do you think will be in the runoff? It would be, I think the most surprising thing would be if someone wins running away and there is no runoff over the next month. But
that would be the shocker, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that would be like really a shocker. I think that would sort of blow everybody away.
But when we ask around the office, no two people have the same two in the runoff. That's how much of a crapshoot mm-hmm. this seems just 4 days out.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
that,
I agree.
The candidates, though, Dalton, are very well defined. I mean, we know who each of them are, and they're all
different enough, right?
Very different enough, where you can have an opinion favoring one over the other three. But it's just turned out really, really interesting at this point, Rob. Like you say, have you been around a race this late into it where you kind of don't really have a clue as to what's going to happen in 1 week?
Yeah, I think they just really do sort of appeal to different segments,
yes.
each of them. And it's sort of, we feel like, you know, everybody has their particular candidate and feels kind of strongly about it, I think. And then there's, you know, so that it's just hard to tell how many, you know, how many Paul Prime voters actually live in Mobile? How mm-hmm. many people are going to turn out for Barbara? How many young people are for Spiro? Are they going to be? Are they going to turn out? How many mm-hmm. people who are at West Mobile who really like Connie Hudson are going to turn out? You know, they are. You know, it, so it's it really as we always say, and it's you know it's the most boring thing in the world to say, but I'll say it again. It's always about turnout, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so you know, I think if we get, I think we get more than 50,000 people that turn out, that would be really throw things into chaos in terms of what could happen, you know.
Yeah, that'd be around 25%, I guess, if we got to that. So that would be
yeah. I mean, those are that would be a relatively big number for. I mean, we've had that last. I guess when I looked back at where when Jones and Peavy ran and we had you know four people in the race, I think we got right around 50,000 turnout. And of course, we have more people in the city. I think at this point. You know, so it's. I mean, that would be a pretty big turnout. It's been lower in the last few, but I think there's a little more excitement right now.
And quickly, this is also one of your top stories at LanyapMobile.com right now, and for good reason. This has been heating up and heating up. Big Creek Lake, and great work from Scott Johnson speaking with Andy Ellsworth. And I don't know the latest on his legal situation since. This story was published just 2 days ago, but Ellsworth, who first sentence, it's noted that his great-grandfather helped build Big Creek Lake. He's one of these guys and girls protesting the Maw's rule that they don't want fishermen out on their water. And so they've been entering Big Creek Lake via Big Creek, via coming down. They'll launch at a public access point and then get in. But a boom was put in. Sometime over the last week, Ellsworth made it across that, but apparently not without damaging some infrastructure. Now, he might be the first person charged possibly for this?
Well, yeah, he possibly damaged infrastructure.
Possibly damaged infrastructure.
I believe that's what the terminology was. The boom was approved, I believe, in 2018.
Yep.
It just got put up within the last week or two.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't know what that tells you, but, you know, Ma says we needed this to, you know, we have these reasons for doing it. You know, Ellsworth thinks it's more or less to try to keep people out of the lake.
Yeah.
And then, so I think Mollis has filed, you know, they have filed a complaint against him on this. And, you know, it's still kind of up in the air on what's going to happen, if the DA is going to move on it or, you know, I think at this point the sheriff's office has been maybe, you know, kind of going out there and telling people to leave or, and, but they're not really enforcing it. So, yeah, it's a really fascinating situation. There's a lot of civil disobedience here, and the question of whether it's really right to close the lake down or not. And, you know, there's a lot of places where people do fish in the public drinking reservoirs, and they do ride their boats around. And you know, obviously, Maws has their point that they don't want to see invasive species attached to the bottom of somebody's boat and come down here and get dumped in the lake. And all of a sudden we've got problems with invasive clams and more of the giant salvina, which we already have there. So, I mean, there's just, you know, it's easy to see both sides of it, but it's definitely heating up.
You know, it's going to be kind of crazy if, when it's all said and done, there's nobody on Big Creek Lake. And the lake at Langan Park has got kayakers all over the place, which you weren't allowed to do that. It's kind of like a complete reversal.
Well, I think, you know, Big Creek, Maws has got a plan to allow people to fish out there. And I think that's one thing people forget about. They do have a plan to do it. But it's just you would rent their boats.
Right.
It would just not be allowing people to bring their own boats in. And it would be more, you know, just more regimented in how they do it. But there is a plan to allow people to use it. So I think there's some middle ground there, but you know, folks are like, hey, we want to use our boats, we want to go do our thing, and it's turned into, you know, it's a Boston Tea Party out there, man.
Yeah, it sure is. And I keep you just a second longer, because we had this post, you mentioned the sheriff's office regarding Big Creek Lake. Sheriff Paul Birch a lot of people wondering what exactly he was talking about when he posted on Facebook Tuesday going after a judge. He didn't name the judge, but promised to eventually name the judge. And he mentioned animal abuse rulings, said this judge was basically acting as a defense attorney. And then we didn't get much more. And yesterday, the sheriff's office comes out and says Birch was speaking from his personal views, not speaking on behalf of
the office.
But then we also had the story, and I don't want to link that. I mean, we don't know what he was talking about, but you had this story about Dog River Bridge. Remember after Christmas last year, throwing two puppies off the bridge. They ended up surviving. The puppies did, but one of the 18-year-old in that case getting youthful offender status. I don't know if that's what Birch was referencing, but do you think we'll get any answers to that?
I don't know. You know, I think, I mean, I know that the sheriff is a, he's a passionate individual, and I think sometimes he may get a little passionate. I think it's a little silly to say, hey, I'm the sheriff, but I'm acting not as the sheriff right now. He's the sheriff. Everybody knows that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I mean, when he says something like that, it definitely gets everybody's attention. And I think he, you know, they kind of looked at it and said, well, you know, if we do this, we're going to really run into some issues with cases we have and before judges. And, you know, on top of that, may upset a lot of the judges in that regard. So maybe it doesn't work real well. But yes, there was also a case that where that happened, where the kid got youthful offender. His, I guess she's listed as his mother. That basically from the case that, you know, he more or less, I think, said that it was her idea to get rid of the dogs because they ate her chickens or something like that, killed her chickens. Mm-hmm. So I don't know, but that is one case that involves some animal abuse that happened in the last couple of days where he was given youthful offender. I don't know if those are connected or not, but it's one of the only ones we know of.
Right.
It's the only one we know of at this point.
A lot of breaking news, so Rob. A lot of breaking news.
Yes.
A lot of breaking news because I'm looking at Lanyapa online right now. If folks want to digest Lanyapa in that way, what can they do?
Man, if you ain't getting your 30 cents worth right now, I don't know what to tell you. You know, it's 30 cents a day. Go online. It's lanyapmobile.com. Get signed up. $9 a month. It's $1 for the first month. If you don't like it, cancel. But we're working hard. There's plenty of news out there. You're missing it if you're not involved.
Thanks a bunch, Rob. We'll talk again in a week.
All right, take care, guys.
Bye. Rob Holbert, Lanyap, lanyapmobile.com. And we'll come back. Last segment of the morning for Mobile Mornings. Let you know who's coming up on the Jeff Poor Show. It's on the way. 251-343-0106.
Dan and the coach. Coach Jordan. Dalton Orwig, FM Talk 106.5, Mobile Mornings.
You can just call me Coach D.O.
Coach D.O. With the flag football.
That's right.
And maybe by next year, you could ascend to, I know you're outside linebackers and special teams right now, but by next year, you could be the guy. You could
That's the hope. Yeah. Hopefully, we don't have to move too far to make that a reality, move to a different district.
Then you do a press conference to kick off the year, and you say, okay, let's get this out of the way. We had two of our players arrested for bicycle racing over the summer, and they will not miss all the games. Mm-hmm. They will miss the game against Bayside Christian, something like that.
So flag football, my six-year-old playing. I get to coach, lifelong dream of mine. They have away games. Did you know that? We're going to have six-year-olds away at
getting on a bus
at Bayside Academy. Something else. Hey, coming up, the Jeff Poor Show, Congressman Robert Adderholt in hour one, Congressman Gary Palmer in hour two, April Marie Fogle in hour three. Big money coming to Alabama from the defense bill. I'm sure they'll be speaking about that some. We'll be back tomorrow, I guess, huh, Dan?
We'll be here.